two simple points for today. The first is that Jesus said, according to the Gospel of John, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. And I say to you today, if you love me, learn. And my second point develops from this first. All learning comes from God. God is the ultimate teacher. How did you learn to love learning? Now, love may not be the first verb that comes to mind when you think of your schooling. If you had a harsh teacher or teachers, that may have created some negative associations with learning for you. For instance, my sixth grade teacher, Mr. Hartkopf, literally, hard head, Hartkopf, made us do straight leg raises for what felt like hours at a time, and you couldn't lift your feet more than 6 inches off the ground. It was grueling. I suppose it gave us all good abs that I now can only look back upon fondly. For many, though, schooling can be painful. But schooling is not the same as learning. Ideally, learning is at the heart of schooling, and for most educators, that's why we get into the field. We love learning, and we want to communicate that love to others. I know that's why I became a professor. As many of you know, I grew up in the Missouri Synod tradition of Lutheranism. There were many wonderful things about that upbringing. It gave me a good foundation and memorized Bible verses. But it didn't encourage me to think critically. That came later in college, and I have to admit it was a liberation for me. I will forever be grateful to the professors who opened my mind to scientific rationality, critical study of the Bible, and who opened my mind to what I call critical wonder, the capacity to think and yet to wonder at beauty and mystery at the same time. My professors loved to learn, and they taught me to love learning. So did my parents, many other teachers over the years. But it was those professors who put things together in a new way for me, and I wanted to convey that same love of learning to others, so I followed in their footsteps. If you love me, learn. So let me ask it again. How did you learn to love learning? I'll give you another example from my life. Some of you know that I love to play the saxophone. It's a source of great joy for me to be able to read music and to improvise along with other musicians, or even just to play along in our living room with the backing tracks from the Hal Leonard Reel books. Just blaring on our stereo. Check it out. Those backing tracks are a great way to learn how to get better at improvising. So I'll tell you the story of how I learned to play the saxophone. Growing up in Appleton, we could start to play an instrument in band in the sixth grade. We'd have a director come into our school one day a week, as I recall it. I don't remember his name. And I played the clarinet. I played that instrument because my Aunt Joni had played the clarinet and was willing to pass it down to me, saving my parents the expense of renting or buying a horn. And I was terrible. When I moved to junior high in seventh grade, I took my clarinet with me to band class there, which, as I recall, met 3 days a week. I could play all of one song well, Little Brown Jug. And here's where my learning took off. My seventh grade band director, a fine trumpet player by the name of Rand Skelton, took me aside one day and said, "John, you're not very good on the clarinet, and you don't seem to be enjoying it. Why don't you try the saxophone?" Now, Rand loves jazz, and we had a jazz band where he needed saxophone players. I started on the baritone sax, big horn, provided by the school. It was a huge instrument for a slightly built, skinny, seventh grader. But I learned to love playing jazz, and I got better. That summer, I started private lessons with Rand, who lived in an apartment on the south side of Appleton. Our home was on the north side. The two locations were about 2 miles apart. And on the morning of my lesson, one of my parents would drop me off at Rand's apartment on their way to work. After my hour-long lesson, I'd have to walk home, dragging that huge hunk of brass in its heavy hardboard case. I schlepped it, hoisted it, dragged it, threw it over my shoulder, put it on my back, pushed it in front of me, dragged it behind me. I crossed College Avenue, Wisconsin Avenue, Richmond Street, sweating in the July sun. And I probably do exaggerate that labor just a tad, but it was a load to haul. And I learned to love playing jazz. As I learned to practice etudes and scales, learning to follow melodies as written, listening to changes, learning and practicing over and over and over again, blues scales. By the fall of eighth grade, I was playing the alto sax, and for the next 9 years of my life, I sat first chair in big bands through junior high, high school, and college, and played in all kinds of rock and roll, gospel, and blues bands that gave me not only incredible musical experiences, but also some of the deepest friends of my life. I learned through love to love learning. And that makes a virtual circle or a spiral of love leading to learning, leading to love, and on in a never-ending song. Now, I'm willing to wager that the story of learning would be similar for you, too. You learn to love, and then you learn something else, some content, some skill that has stayed with you your entire life. If you love me, learn. But that sounds kind of prescriptive, can be a little scary even. If you love me, learn. It's an imperative, a command. So here's my second point. All learning comes from God. God is the ultimate teacher. God's grace comes to us any time we learn. The Jewish tradition is quite clear about this, and Jesus, of course, was a Jew. There's a reason so many amazing innovations in the sciences, think Einstein, or arts, think Seinfeld, came from Jews. The tradition values learning, and Jews are inclined to see God at work in and through learning. After all, the leader of a Jewish community isn't called a pastor, which means shepherd. The leader of a Jewish community is called a rabbi, which means teacher. And that was probably the first and most commonly used title for Jesus too, our rabbi, our teacher. But it's not just the Jewish religious tradition that has stressed the love of learning. In early Christianity, during the Roman Empire, there was a group of theologians who wrote what they called apologies for the Christian faith. As you may know, early Christians were occasionally persecuted in the Roman Empire as members of an illicit religion. They weren't Jews, they weren't pagans, and if the emperor needed a scapegoat, the Christians, who were growing rapidly, often served that purpose. In response to this persecution, some theologians, who were also philosophers, wrote books they called apologies. Now, the technical meaning of the word apologia in Greek is not what we understand when we hear the word apology. You know, I'm sorry. The technical meaning of the word apologia is a defense. And so that's what these theologians wrote, learned defenses of the Christian faith that they sent, in many cases, in long letters to the emperor. Because they wrote apologies, These theologians became known collectively, there were dozens of them, as apologists. One of the most famous of the apologists for Christianity lived in Rome in the 2nd century CE. His name was Justin, and Lisa and I actually named our first son after him. Justin's first apology was sent to the emperor Marcus Aurelius, who was a particularly learned emperor. Aurelius was a devotee of the Stoic philosophy, and his meditations are still great, great reading. And Justin's argument in this apology sent to the emperor Marcus Aurelius, it's hundreds of pages long, and he wrote two of them. This first one, main idea is this. Anyone who is reasonable is a Christian. Being a Christian is reasonable. A Christian will be a reasonable citizen. Anyone who lives by reason is a Christian. The word Justin used for reason was the Greek word logos. It was a word that the Stoics loved. It's the word from which we get our word logic. And it's also the word which the author of the Gospel of John used to describe Jesus. In the beginning was the word, logos. And the word, logos, was God. Jesus is logos. Jesus is reason. To follow Jesus is to be reasonable, to follow reasoning. If you love me, learn. God is our ultimate teacher. Of course, not all Christians have taken this path of following learning. We need reminders. In the Middle Ages, especially, as people were dealing with plague, a tendency emerged to develop what we might call magical thinking or superstition. Lots of ideas about the devil and hell and the Antichrist began coalescing in response to plague times, usually blaming someone for it. The devil loves fear, after all. Conversely, plague also gave birth to lots of ideas about heaven as an escape from plague, which makes sense if you're living in fear of it. These ideas could get pretty wild. Angels and demons and the devil were everywhere for lots of medieval Christians as they navigated their way through plagues whose scientific causes they did not understand. But the heart of medieval Christianity, Christianity in the Middle Ages, was found not in cities, interestingly, which is where early Christianity flourished. Thank Corinth, Ephesus, Rome. The heart of medieval Christianity was in monasteries, places largely separated out from places of plague. And in monasteries, women and men preserved the belief, as historian Jean Leclerc put it, that the love of learning is the desire for God. The love of learning is the desire for God. Monasteries then preserved learning across Europe, preserved civilization, really. And eventually, this emphasis on learning gave birth to universities like the one in Paris or Oxford or Berlin. When we learn, these medieval Christian theologians asserted, we find a loving God there. To learn is to love God and to love our neighbors, they might say. And this conjunction between God and learning is at the heart of every modern theology, including many in Islam. For modern theologians, there can be no conflict between science and religion. Indeed, how could there be? Can truth conflict with itself? For instance, the Muslim theologian Fethullah Gulen, whose biography I wrote last year, put it this way, and I paraphrase, science and religion are two different aspects of God's revelation to us. Science is God's book in nature, the Quran, and he would also add the Hebrew Bible and the writings about Christ, is God's book in words. The two don't conflict. And if they do, the problem is in our interpretation. When science and religion appear to conflict, it is up to us to learn more in order to understand. Science without religion can be brute, destructive materialism. Religion without science can be superstition and extremism. Science and religion work together. We need them both. If you love me, learn. God is our ultimate teacher. Over the past 2 months of Safer at Home, all of us have been learning new patterns of behavior, and we've also had to learn some new ways of understanding the world. That learning can be unsettling. Whenever we learn, we leave some comfortable pre-understanding behind. But facing this plague can be an extraordinary opportunity for us to learn some new things that may have a big impact on our world. I have three brief applications for us as I come to a close. The first application of our new learning is follow the science. In a time of plague, fear is our worst enemy, but ignorance is a close second. To ignore what experts are telling us about how to protect each other isn't an act of faith or an act of courage. It's an act of folly, magical thinking, superstition. That's not the kind of faith we practice here at Union. Our faith is informed by the faith of Jesus, the Logos, the faith of the apologists, the faith of those medieval monks for whom the love of learning is the desire for God. If you love me, follow the science. Second application of our new learning is celebrate solidarity. In a time of plague, isolation is painful. Last Sunday, we took a trip after church to Appleton to see our son, daughter, and sister-in-law, daughter-in-law, grandsons, and then to visit my parents, where I gave my mom some plants I'd grown for her. And I must say, it was painful. We're a close family, so we hug a lot, especially those grandsons. But I can't hug them right now. I couldn't hug my mom either. I've cried a good bit since this pandemic, but last Sunday was particularly tough. Still, we celebrated what solidarity we could have, 6 feet apart. If you love me, celebrate solidarity. Third application of our new learning in this age of plague is to live sustainably. It's impossible for us to say that we love God when we are harming our neighbor, and no neighbor is closer to us than the earth. So let's learn to live more sustainably, not only because we have to during this pandemic, but because we want to. Because we know that living more sustainably is the right thing to do for the rest of our lives. If you love me, learn sustainability. God wants us all to live. After all, God is love. So when we learn to love learning, when we love the gritty details of nature we learn in science, when we love the solidarity, we can experience in so many ways with other people, through music, playing games, art. When we love the earth and learn to sustain it for future generations through our children and grandchildren, whenever we learn, God is there. So let's change that imperative to a declarative. If you love me, learn, then becomes. When you love me, you will learn. Amen.